adapting to the microgravity environment. Vijay and Jamie didn't see much of the space station. The terminal where the clipper ship docked was designed to accommodate arrivals who were not accustomed to the nearly zero gravity of the orbiting station. Passageways were thickly carpeted and narrow enough for passengers to grip the handrails set on both sides of the bulkheads so that they could proceed cautiously, hand by hand, to the reception area. Jamie's head felt stuffy as he shuffled along in the slow-moving line. Vijay was ahead of him, apparently handling the micro-G with no trouble at all. A young man several places up the line, wearing the gray coveralls of a technician, laughingly allowed himself to float off the floor and rise until his crew-cut hair bumped gently against the overhead. Several of the older passengers groaned at the sight. "Please don't attempt any gymnastics in this confined space," called the female attendant from the head of the line.
"Get down, Grabowski," a rougher voice demanded. "Don't start with your wise-ass crap."
Jamie laughed softly. The temptation to show off was irresistible in some men, especially if they were young and there were young women present to show off for. Moving carefully, Jamie and Vijay left the other arrivals and followed the illuminated arrows along the bulkheads that led them to the docking port where the lunar shuttlecraft would depart for Selene. A pair of smiling attendants were at the port and guided them through the open hatch of the shuttlecraft. The shuttlecraft's passenger compartment was less than half the size of the clipper ship's, and much more utilitarian. Jamie and Vijay found their seats and strapped in.
"Phew!"
Vijay gusted, her expression halfway between a grin and a grimace.
"I'd forgotten how snacky zero-G can be when you're not used to it."
Keeping a straight face, Jamie replied, "You're not reneging on our overnight stay on the way back, are you?" She started to shake her head, but thought better of it.
"I don't know about you, love, but I'm out of training."
Very seriously, Jamie said, "Might take a few nights to get our sea legs back." Vijay smiled impishly.
"Well, if you've got the time..."
"We'll see," he said. "Depends on how things go with Stavanger." Dossier, Douglas Stavanger. Douglas Stavanger's father had been murdered by his own stepson, Doug's half-brother. Paul Stavanger was an astronaut and the first black board member of Masterson Aerospace Corporation, who was more than affirmative action window dressing. Unfortunately, he fell in love with the wife of the corporation's CEO, and when that philandering egomaniac committed suicide, his son blamed his mother's lover. Paul Stavanger married the widowed Joanna Masterson and had a son by her, Douglas. Paul's dream was to make the struggling human settlement on the moon, then called simply Moon Base, into a fully self-sufficient community. He pushed the development of nanotechnology to separate pure oxygen from the lunar rocks, and even to combine some of the oxygen with hydrogen gleaned from the solar wind to make drinkable water. His stepson used nanomachines to murder Paul Stavanger. He tried to murder his half-brother as well, but failed, thanks to therapeutic nanomachines that repaired Douglas's damaged tissues and acted inside his body as a powerful, purposeful, man-made immune system that protected his cells against disease and trauma. Douglas Stavanger took up his father's dream, and with the help of nanotechnology, Moonbase became a thriving, growing human city dug into the ringwall mountains of the giant crater Alphonsus. When Moonbase took the inevitable step and declared itself independent of all earthly nations, the old United Nations sent peacekeeper troops to bring the errant colony into line. Stavanger led the fight against them, and Moonbase became the independent nation of Selene. Stavanger married Edith Elgin, one of the news reporters sent to cover the brief, almost bloodless battle between the lunar residents and the peacekeeper troops. He became the head of Selene's governing council and a celebrity on two worlds. But he could never return to Earth. Fearful politicians and religious leaders, pointing to the use of nanomachines as murder weapons, banned nanotechnology on Earth. Douglas Stavanger, whose body was filled with protective nanomachines, was not allowed even to visit the world of his birth. So he stayed on the moon, at Selene, and did not age. Selene. Jamie and Vijay never saw the outside of the lunar shuttlecraft. The passenger compartment was small, only a dozen seats, but every one of them was filled. They looked like business people, Jamie thought, as he surveyed the other moonward-bound passengers. Suits, mostly dark in color, although there were a couple of bright sports coats in the lot. Not scientists or techies. No jeans or pullovers except for his own. The shuttlecraft accelerated at nearly a full G halfway to the moon, then turned around and decelerated the rest of the way to the surface of the huge crater Alphonsus. The G-force was enough to keep everyone's stomach reasonably in place for the five-hour-long trip. They even had a meal in transit, with no more difficulty than sipping the wine from covered containers. An animated video showed the passengers the details of the shuttlecraft's trajectory and its highly efficient plasma propulsion system. It took the Apollo astronauts more than 3 days to make the trip from Earth to Moon, explained the video's voice track. Today it takes only a few hours to travel the same distance. The thrust was enough to banish the woozy feeling of zero-G. Jamie felt almost normal by the time the shuttlecraft settled down on the dusty concrete landing pad at Armstrong Spaceport. Here on the Moon, you are now in 1/6 of normal terrestrial gravity, the safety video warned. Please use extreme caution when walking or moving about. Weighted boots are available at the visitor center for a nominal rental fee. Neither Jamie nor Vijay bothered with the boots. They headed out of the shuttlecraft in the slow, shuffling strides they both remembered from earlier visits to the moon. Other passengers stumbled and staggered in the low gravity. They rode the automated electric bus through the long tunnel that connected the spaceport to the city proper. It looked like an oversized golf cart, roofless, with 10 rows of double seats. Jamie used his pocket phone to pull up a map of Selene and locate the hotel. "This place has grown, even in the few years since I was here," he said, showing Vijay the labyrinth of tunnels that made up the underground community.
"People come up here to retire," she said. "The low gravity and all that."
All that meant escaping from Earth's problems, Jamie knew. From the crime and poverty and the disastrous flooding and climate changes that rack the world. "Pretty expensive retirement," he muttered.
"The rich always run away," Vijay said. "They use their money to insulate them from troubles."
"Is that what we're doing?" Jamie asked himself silently as the bus rolled smoothly, quietly through the shadowy tunnel. "Running away to Mars?" "No," he immediately answered. "We're exploring a new world. We're searching for new knowledge, which is why the fundamentalists hate us."
"I don't know if I could live in these tunnels," Vijay said. "Not full time."
"Aussies do," Jamie said, "in Cooper Pedy."
"The opal mines," she murmured.
Then she added,
"But they can go up on the surface any time they want."
Jamie said, "There's the Grand Plaza under the dome. Plenty of trees and greenery up there. They even have a swimming pool." Nodding, Vijay murmured,
"Still."
By the time they reached their hotel room, guided by the electronic maps on the corridor walls, their two travel bags were already on the king-sized bed. Jamie glanced at his wristwatch.
"Hungry? It's just about dinner time."
"Let's unpack first," she suggested.
It didn't take long. Soon they were walking up the gently sloping ramp that led to the hotel's restaurant. There were no stairs in Selene, too tricky for newcomers to the low lunar gravity.
"This is lovely," Vijay said once they were seated at a small table.
The restaurant was almost full, but the patrons' conversations were quiet, muted. Soft music purred from the speakers set into the ceiling, something classical that sounded vaguely familiar to Jamie. Human waiters in dark jackets moved among the tables, together with flat-top little robots that carried the food and drinks.
"Big day tomorrow,"
Vijay smiled brightly, trying to make it sound cheerful.
"Right," Jamie agreed.
Inwardly, he wondered what it was going to be like seeing Edith again.
Once they had ordered and the human waiter was walking away from their table, Jamie started to say, VJ.